Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using simple grammar and a limited vocabulary. Today on the show, we hear from Ashley Thompson, Brian Lynn, Dan Novak, and Faith Perlow. Later, Ana Mateo joins us for Words and Their Stories. But first, here's Dan Fridell.
Nina Wong is a California high school student who is thinking about where she wants to go for college. Until recently, she was considering Oberlin College in the state of Ohio. Wong, who plays flute and piano, hopes to one day also study medicine or law. Oberlin is known for having strong academic and music programs. But last month, she changed her mind. "I don't want to go to a school in a state where there is an abortion ban," she said. Ohio is one of the states that now has strong restrictions on abortion, a medical procedure that ends a pregnancy. On June 24th, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled to overturn the 1973 Roe v. Wade case that protected abortion rights throughout the United States. The court's decision permits individual states to go back to old rules or put new restrictions on abortion in place. Wong had been thinking Oberlin's good academic reputation and strong music classes might make it a good fit for her, but not anymore. Wong is not the only high school student rethinking their college choices. Samira Murad is a high school student in New York City. She said she is worried about going to college in a state where she will not be free to be herself. She said, "I'm still finding out who I am. I don't want to move somewhere I can't be myself because of laws put in place." It is still too soon for data to show whether fewer people are applying to college in Ohio and other states that now have strict laws on abortion. But some college counselors say they are already talking with students who are crossing their dream school off their lists. Daniel Santos runs the Florida-based college counseling service, Preppery. "Some of our students," he said, "will not apply to colleges and universities in states which may infringe on their access to reproductive rights." Kristen Wilmot works with students at a company called Top Tier Admissions in Massachusetts. She said, "Some students are removing schools in Florida and Texas from their application lists because of abortion restrictions. Florida and Texas are among the states with strong anti-abortion laws." Although there is no data yet on how the Supreme Court decision may affect application numbers, there are past examples to consider. Jason Weingarten works for Ivy Coach in New York. He helps students think about colleges. He said that in 2016, some students told him they no longer wanted to apply to top colleges in North Carolina after the state put a controversial law in place that year. The law restricted which bathrooms transgender people could use. But many still chose to attend both Duke University and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, UNC. In fact, the number of students who applied to UNC in 2017 went up by 14% compared to the year before. The state of Texas put a restrictive abortion law in place nearly 1 year ago. Shireen Abaden is a spokesperson for the University of Texas's medical school. Abaden said, that the school has not seen a drop in applications since the law went into effect on September 1st, 2021. Alexis Prisco is one student who is rethinking her plans. Prisco is a 17-year-old high school student from Maryland. She wanted to apply to Washington University, a top school in St. Louis, Missouri. Both of her parents went there, but now that Missouri is a state with strong abortion restrictions, she is worried. She said her mother warned her about applying to colleges in states that had strong anti-abortion laws set to take effect after the Supreme Court decision. Washington University did not answer questions sent by the Reuters news agency for this story. Oberlin also did not provide a comment. Washington University pointed reporters to a recent story on the school's website reacting to the decision. The university leader and the leader of the School of Medicine wrote, "This is a painful moment for many in our society." The university leaders said they understand many people are feeling frustrated, disappointed, and even scared of what this decision may mean. Sabrina Thaler is a student in Maryland. The 16-year-old said, "She has been thinking about an important abortion-related question since May, when an early version of the Supreme Court's decision was leaked." She said, "She asked this question in a recent class discussion. What if I go to a college in a state where abortion is banned and I get raped and then I don't have the option to have an abortion?" I'm Dan Friedel.
The surface of Utah's Great Salt Lake dropped to its lowest recorded level this July. Researchers and politicians are worried about serious threats to animals and people who live near it. The nearby city of Salt Lake City is already facing dust storms. Experts fear these storms, which blow dirt into the air, could get worse. Scientist Kevin Perry has studied the lake for years. He said, "To save the Great Salt Lake so that we don't become Dust Lake City is to make a choice that the lake is valuable and that the lake needs to have water put into it." For years, water that would have gone to the lake has been used for drinking water, industry, and agriculture. In addition, an ongoing drought, a long period of time with not enough rain, has reduced the lake's water level. On July 3rd, U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, said that the surface of the lake fell to the lowest level since records began in 1847. Water levels are expected to decrease further until the autumn or early winter. The lake now contains about one-fourth of the water it contained when it was at its highest level in 1987. The lake has lost nearly half its average surface area. This means about 2,000 square kilometers of lake bed have been exposed. Dried-out earth that used to be underwater has created dust clouds that contain calcium, sulfur, and arsenic. Arsenic is an element linked to cancer and developmental problems in unborn babies. Exposed lakebed also has chemicals left over from copper and silver mining. Perry told the Reuters news agency, "If you breathe that dust over an extended period of time, like decades or longer, then it can lead to increases in different types of cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and such. People are not the only ones at risk. Underwater reef-like structures are home to a microorganism that is food for brine shrimp, which are an important food for birds. But the reef-like structures dry out and turn gray when exposed to air. An estimated 10 million birds of more than 330 species travel through or live at the lake each year, said Max Momquist. He is with the National Audubon Society, an environmental group. The shrimp are also harvested and are valued at millions of dollars. Officials estimate that economic activity from the lake is worth up to $2 billion each year. Utah Governor Spencer Cox signed 11 new laws dealing with water policy in the last lawmaking season, or legislative session. Long-term answers will require agriculture, industry, and cities to use less water. Utah State Representative Tim Hawks said there is political pressure to do something. As we hit these new record lows, we start to run the risk that all of those values that we derive from the Great Salt Lake could be at risk, he said. I'm Ashley Thompson.
Chinese scientists say they have developed a robotic fish that can remove microplastic particles from water environments. Researchers working on the project say the robots could help to clean up plastic pollution in oceans around the world. The robotic swimmers are about 1.3 centimeters long. They are made of a soft chemical compound. The robots are designed to absorb microplastics while moving through the water. The project was launched by a team at Sichuan University in southwestern China. The researchers said the robots have already performed well in shallow water, and they plan to carry out more tests in deeper waters. The scientists reported their findings in a new study in Nano Letters. The publication comes from the American Chemical Society, a nonprofit organization supported by the U.S. Congress. The robotic fish were built to target microplastic particles, which are smaller than 5 millimeters. Studies have confirmed that microplastic pollution has been discovered in many natural environments. The material comes from the breakdown of manufactured plastic products and industrial waste. The team said the robots can be controlled by light. Turning a near-infrared light laser on and off causes the fish's tail to move back and forth, the American Chemical Society said. The robotic fish can swim up to 2.76 body lengths per second. The researchers said this is faster than most similar soft robots. Wang Yuyan was a member of Sichuan University's research team. She told Reuters news agency that the small, lightweight robot is currently being used to collect microplastics for research purposes. But Wong added that the team plans to expand that use so the robot fish can remove larger amounts of microplastic waste from deep ocean areas. The fish can take in different kinds of microplastics and even repair itself when damaged, the researchers said. And if a robot fish is accidentally eaten by a real fish, it could safely digest the material, the team added. Wong said similar robots could be developed to be placed inside the human body to remove unwanted materials or disease. I'm Brian Lin.
The Mattel Toy Company has created a Barbie doll with the famous British scientist Jane Goodall as its model. The company released the new doll this week, the latest member of the Barbie Toy Makers Inspiring Women series. Mattel said the doll, made from recycled plastic, honors Goodall's revolutionary research on chimpanzees in Tanzania, and her efforts to protect the wild animals. The 88-year-old Goodall said she was thrilled to partner with Barbie. "My entire career, I've wanted to help inspire kids to be curious and explore the world around them, just like I did," she said. The doll is dressed in a light brown shirt and shorts, much like that seen in the many images of Goodall at work in Africa. It also comes with a notebook, binoculars, and another doll modeled on the real chimp Goodall named David Greybeard. He was the first chimpanzee with which she built trust in Tanzania's Gombe National Park. The relationship permitted her to study the animals extremely closely. "I wanted a doll to be me even before this idea came up," the 88-year-old scientist told Reuters. She praised Mattel for developing new Barbies that represent a wider number of working women. "There's all kinds of astronauts and doctors and things like that," she said. She noted that many children learn about her in school. "They'll be thrilled to have the Barbie doll," she said. Lisa McKnight agrees. She is the executive vice president and global head of Barbie and Dolls for Mattel. "We hope that this collection," she said, "inspires kids to learn more about green careers, how they can protect the planet, and act out sustainable stories through doll play." Goodall started her research in what is now Tanzania in the 1960s. She produced massive amounts of research on wild chimpanzees over the years. She documented how they made and used tools, lived in communities, and showed a high level of emotional understanding. Mattel's Barbie division has teamed up with the nonprofit Jane Goodall Institute to support several projects centered on ecology-related careers. The company released the Barbie on July 14th, World Chimpanzee Day. The day also marked the 62nd anniversary of Goodall's arrival at Gombe. Goodall wants to teach children that if they want to have a good effect on the changing environment, they must act. Goodall said, "Hope is about action. Climate change, loss of biodiversity, poverty, unsustainable lifestyles, pollution, you name it. We reach out to others because there are people working on each one of these problems. I'm Faith Perlow.
A research organization based in Geneva, Switzerland, warns that rising prices are likely to affect women more than men. The World Economic Forum released a report Wednesday on the economic conditions of women and men around the world. The group warns that inflation could increase the difference, what is called the gap, between men and women in the world's labor force. The World Economic Forum is best known for holding a yearly gathering of famous business, cultural, and political leaders in the Swiss town of Davos. For the past 16 years, the group has written the Global Gender Gap Report that aims to measure gender equality around the world. The group said there were hopes that the gender gap would begin to become smaller as the COVID-19 health crisis eased. Now, economic shocks threaten to make the gap worse, it said. The forum estimates that it will take 132 years for the world to reach gender equality. That is down from the 136 years estimated in last year's report. The organization studies gender differences in four main areas: pay and economic opportunity, education, health, and political empowerment. The group studied 146 countries, rating each one in the four areas of gender equality. It rated Iceland as the most gender-equal country in the world, followed by Finland, Norway, and New Zealand. Rwanda, Nicaragua, and Namibia were also highly ranked. Germany, Europe's biggest economy, came in 10th place. Further down the list were the world's biggest economies. The United States was 27th, China was 102nd, and Japan was 116th, last among G7 major industrialized nations. Sadia Zahidi is a top official with the World Economic Forum. She said women have been disproportionately affected by the crisis caused by inflation. Women were especially hurt by job losses during the pandemic and a lack of what she called care infrastructure, such as care services for old people or children, Zahidi said. In face of a weak recovery, government and business must make two sets of efforts: targeted policies to support women's return to the workforce and women's talent development in the industries of the future, she said. Otherwise, we risk eroding the gains of the last decades permanently and losing out on the future economic returns of diversity, Zahidi said. I'm Dan Novak.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. A couple of years ago, we wrote a story titled Ways We Sleep. We taught expressions such as catch a few Z's, get some shut-eye, nod off and turn in, just to name a few. There are many, many sleep expressions in English. But today we talk about ones that deal with problem solving. Now, it is common to sleep on a bed. When we go camping, we sleep on the ground, or we sleep on a cot. If we fall asleep watching television, or when we visit a friend's house, we may sleep on a couch. And sometimes we may have to sleep on a floor. But to sleep on has another meaning.
If I have a problem and cannot think of an answer, I can sleep on it. Often an answer comes to me the next day. Let's say some coworkers are working on a project together, and they run into a difficult problem. No one can think of a way to solve it. One person might say, "Look, we're not getting anywhere, so let's sleep on it. Tomorrow we can try to figure this out." To sleep on something means you give yourself time to think about a problem overnight. You plan to make a decision about it later. This does not have to mean that you are actively thinking about the problem. Your subconscious may be working on it. For example, if I am writing a story and run into a problem, I often sleep on it. I think about the problem before I go to sleep and hope that my sleeping self comes to the rescue. Sometimes we use this expression when we just want more time to pass. We also use it when we want to look at a problem with a rested mind. We know that sleep is necessary to be healthy, both mentally and physically. Sometimes a problem doesn't look so bad the next day after a good night's sleep. Here is another sleep expression. Some problems are not a big deal. They are not important. You can describe them as nothing to lose sleep over. And if you want to say you are not going to worry about something, you can say you're not going to lose sleep over it. Let's listen while two friends use this expression.
Hey, Tish, did you hear about the new apartment building coming to our neighborhood? It's going to have 100 units.
I did. Why do you ask?
It will mean a lot more people and a lot less parking. Aren't you upset?
Well, Mark, we do live in a city, and cities have lots of people. So I'm not losing any sleep over it, if that's what you're asking.
Good for you. I've lost a lot of sleep over it.
Okay, who is upset by the new apartment building, Mark or Tish? If you said Mark, you are right. For our last expression, we talk about serious problems, problems in which your life might be at stake. If you sleep with one eye open, you are too distrustful to fall asleep. You are suspicious of others around you. You are worried or even fearful that someone or something will hurt you in your sleep. For example, once I took a friend camping with me. She was a city girl and had never been camping. While sleeping in a tent in the woods, she heard animal sounds and movements in the woods all night. In the morning, I asked her how she slept. She said, "I didn't sleep a wink. I slept with one eye open the whole night." And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. If you run into a problem with English, try sleeping on it. Maybe the answer will come to you with the morning sun. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.